Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan, and you're listening at CindySheehanSoapbox.com or CommunityProgressiveRadio.org. We have two guests on the Soapbox today, and our first guest is Sherry Roberts. Sherry has worked in media for more than 20 years in one capacity or the other. Her media years were spent mostly in broadcast radio and print. She has been an American activist for more than a decade and is currently a full-time freelance writer who writes for a handful of companies and private clients while she is working on two books of her own. She also maintains a well-read blog at www.sherri.com. So that's www.sherrispeak.com, C-H-E-R-I, and has her own column in Colorado's premier cannabis newspaper called The Daily Doobie. Sherry Roberts, welcome to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox.
Well, thank you, Cindy. It's good to be here and talk to you again.
Oh, it's nice to talk to you. So, while I was on the tour to Peace, investigative journalist Michael Hastings died in a suspicious car accident. So, can you remind my listeners just the facts of what happened that morning?
Basically, nobody really knows or has come forward and said what Michael was doing at 4 in the morning, but he was out and about 4 a.m. He was caught on an overnight news camera speeding red light, and shortly thereafter, there was a massive accident. The car was fully engulfed in brilliant red and orange flames. It looked very suspicious, just the burn itself. You weren't seeing a lot of the black smoke and stuff like that. It was a very, very hot fire.
Mm-hmm.
The thing with Michael is contrary to what the media has said, they said that just hours before he had sent this real cryptic email to some friends and colleagues, and the media kind of has it wrong. Yeah, so basically, Michael Hastings sent out an email to just a small handful of friends and colleagues. There's no way of telling how many people were blind copied on it, but it appears to have five or six of his friends and colleagues that were standard, copied on it.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, the gist of the email, it was somewhat cryptic, and, who knows if he had some kind of code set up with the people at BuzzFeed or something, but he felt that he might need to go off the radar. So, of course, you got people wondering, is he still alive? Was this staged? And then you have the other people saying, he's been murdered and this, that, and the other. There's a lot of questions with regards to it. He was working on a lot of things, and there's even speculation on whether it's his workings with the Barrett Brown case or something to do with Petraeus. Elise Jordan, Michael's wife, she did correct the record and say that he was not working on the Jill Kelly story.
Okay, let's hold on. And you just said several things I think that we need to clarify. First of all, talk about his article about General Petraeus.
Well, with regards to General Petraeus, the misconception about Michael Hastings as a journalist is people always felt that he, or some people felt that he was, a raging liberal, and that's what his journalism was about.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not the case. With Michael Hastings, if he found a story and he was onto a story that had some kind of significance to the American people in particular, he wrote about it, and he wrote well about it. And that was the thing with Petraeus. One of his main points with Petraeus is that, he was built up to be this big, giant, war hero, because of, the biographer and the illicit affair, it's tainted his record. That's what got all the news, and however brief, because there was not a whole lot about this affair, that he had had. And the thing was, it was more of a whitewash to some other things. Now, I don't know what Michael was onto with regards to Petraeus and what he's been working on since that scandal hit. What I do know is that many people have said that You know, he was definitely working on something to do with the CIA. We know from Barrett Brown's people that he was definitely working also on a story with regards to Barrett Brown's case. It's also been reported on CNN that he was working on specifically on John Brennan, the CIA director, the one who took Petraeus's place. Mm-hmm. Now, when you look at the common denominator between all of those, it goes really hand in hand with everything that's come out with Ed Snowden and the NSA spying and stuff like that. My personal belief is it's all interrelated, but until we hear from Elise Jordan, we just don't know. John Avalon on CNN reported that Elise herself is finishing the story that that Michael had been working on before he died, and that she's doing it herself. So, you know, I mean, that all remains to be seen. You know, Michael's last article for BuzzFeed was on, I want to say, June or July 7th. And, you know, it was very critical of the Obama administration. So, it, you know, that just kind of goes in the face of people that think he's just this liberal journalist. He's not. Mm-hmm. You know, he, sorry if it's important, Michael was telling it.
So, you've been looking, delving into this case. I don't know even if I want to call it a case, but do you think that his death is suspicious?
I do. I do very much so. There's so many things that just doesn't make a lot of sense. And, you know, and you're right, you know, can we call it a case? We don't know. The LAPD says that there's no foul play, so are they actually investigating anything?
Right.
The FBI says they were never investigating Michael Hastings, although he seriously believes so and had told friends and colleagues the same thing, as well as put that in his email. He, Jason Leopold, formerly of Truth Out, has just filed all the federal FOIAs with the FBI to get all of that information, you know, that he can with regards to any investigation with the FBI. But his accident, I mean, you know, when you just look at footage from the accident, there are things that are easily debunked. Of course, you have every conspiracy theorist out there, and I preface this with, I am a conspiracy theorist.
Uh-huh.
But at the same time, I'm also a researcher and a writer, and I try to do it right, and I don't just look at something and run off the deep end and say, oh, my God. And what's happening right now, what started me on this quote-unquote case was a lot of misreporting because of looking at different things in the footage. There is a couple images that have been circulated around that show a white sheet draped across Hastings' car. And there are people that believe three things with that. One is that the sheet is trying to disguise that, A, there's no body in the car. There's another one that's trying to say that the sheet is covering that there's no damage to the front end of the car. And
yeah.
Then the other one is the one that's saying that the sheet is draped so fully across the front end of the car so it will not show that a bomb went off in the car. Now, those are things that when you look at something, it's easy to get excited about, and, you know,
right.
We all know how confirmation bias works, and if we already have a preconceived belief or notion about something, we see an image that somebody tells us what we're going to see, then, of course, that's what we're going to see, unless we're really critically looking at something. And the fact of the matter is that when there is a dead body somewhere, they do cover the view from not only any, you know, bystanders, but also from the media. There was significant damage to the car, and if you look at the images closely that are being circulated with regards to that, you can see one of the first responders with what appears to be either the jaws of life or a similar cutting instrument. You can see that they were cutting away portions of the roof of the vehicle, and when you're looking in the driver's side after the door has been removed, you can see the steering wheel is also gone. You can see that the back of the driver's seat is severely bent forward, especially the headrest. One can only assume from the pictures, if you're looking at them critically, that Michael must have been, you know, bent over that steering wheel, if not even partially, possibly outside of the windshield. I don't know. But that being said, when you're looking at these images, how is a sheet to stay on to cover a body unless they have something to attach it to? And my opinion is that's why it was spread over the whole front end of the car, not necessarily to disguise other things, but to disguise the body itself. They're working with heavy cutting tools. You can see a bunch of first responders on the driver's side. You know the car is moving. It's probably still very hot. I mean, you have to keep in mind, this accident happened just before 4:25 in the morning, and by 9:05, that same morning, KTLA was out there reporting live from the scene. Everything was completely cleared up. There wasn't even wet ground from the water from the fire.
Well, you know, I was had my TV on, and it was a local newscast here in Northern California, and they were actually doing a newscast about how people can hack into your car's computer system and take over the controls.
Yeah, actually there is, I recently wrote just a brief little thing about that. There's a lot of, Forbes recently came out and they were showing on video with some hackers. I don't know who contacted who, but basically everybody knows who Forbes is. They have a video up on YouTube now as well as on their site. And these hackers have the Forbes guy driving. They're sitting in the back seat with a laptop. They are making the car stop. They're making the car accelerate. They're taking away his steering. They're making the car, you know, horn beep. The windshield wipers go off and on. And that's just something that Forbes had come out with. They make no mention whatsoever of Michael Hastings or his accident. They're not trying to be conspiracy theorists. They're just simply stating some facts. DARPA has also been a part of exposing some of the studies with regards to that. Now, interestingly enough, a couple months ago, because, you know, I'm a writer, I do some ghost writing for some people, and then I do writing on my own, and a couple months ago, I actually was assigned an article about a Google remote-controlled car that's in beta right now in Las Vegas, mm-hmm. And that's exactly what it is, and so that stuff is all real. So when we're talking about conspiracy theories and you know what people can latch onto and what they shouldn't latch onto, that's definitely something to keep our eyes on. That's definitely something that we can run with, that people, you know, even if they want to roll their eyes at us, you know, we can disprove them because it is a fact. Other stuff like the sheet, that's speculation. It causes wild, you know, conspiracy theories out there, and you know how things go viral, Cindy.
Well, then, speaking of that, to muddy the waters even further about this incident, we get Alex Jones and Sergeant Biggs thrown into it. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, the collaboration of those two about this incident? I keep on wanting to say case, but I'm going to say incident.
Well, you can say case because I kind of call it case in my own mind. I am definitely investigating this. You know, I'm not an investigator. I'm just a writer and an activist. But when it comes to media and when it comes to the fight against the lies of the mainstream media, we have to fight that fight against alternative media as well. You know, mm-hmm. We can't support one and down another. It doesn't work that way. And what happened with me is as I was looking at those images that we just talked about, you know, I was looking at more news footage, and this Staff Sergeant Joe Biggs, you know, this name kept popping up, and he seems to be getting, or at least was getting, a lot of coverage. Now, Staff Sergeant Biggs, he claims that he was blind copied on that email.
And how did he know Hastings?
Well, they were Hastings was embedded in Iraq with Staff Sergeant Biggs' company. He was in the 82nd Airborne in the Army, and it was one of the times that Hastings was there in Iraq. As a matter of fact, it is around the time where Hastings had, you know, stumbled upon the General McChrystal story, and had begun writing that, which I believe that book came out I forget what time the Rolling Stone article came out, but the book came out in like 2010. But so that's how they met. And, you know, to Joe Biggs' credit, to Staff Sergeant Biggs' credit, when you're in any kind of a trauma-filled environment, people bond. You bond over that stuff. I'm not doubting that him and Michael had some sort of a close relationship, at least at that time. What I am doubting is how close their relationship has been since, especially in the last couple of years. from Staff Sergeant Biggs himself in the interviews, he said that they didn't talk very often, that he would randomly hear from Michael, you know, every few months Michael would just say, hey, how are you doing, you know, and stuff like that. So with Staff Sergeant Biggs, basically, the day after Michael's death, he was on Twitter and he tweets to KTLA, to Carolyn Costello, who is an anchor on KTLA in California. And right after he does that, he retweets a tweet from back in 2011 from Michael. And it, and again, speculation on my part, but it's very obvious that he retweeted that so that he had some kind of corroborating evidence that him and Michael had a relationship, because he had begun actively contacting mainstream media about this email. And also, and I just would like to say, to Carolyn Costello's credit on KTLA, she did a really good job. They did a really good vetting process. She didn't put out misinfo or disinfo, you know, and she was very accommodating to answer all of my questions. You know, and that's really rough when you have one writer questioning other journalists. You know, they don't necessarily want to talk to you. So basically what happens, so Staff Sergeant Joe, he gets on KTLA. He talks about this weird email that he receives. And, you know, there's a little bit about Hastings' death. In those first couple weeks, there was sporadic coverage. But, you know, we've got Snowden in the news, and, you know, we have the State Department scandals in the news with the whistleblower. You know, we're bombarded, you know, by all this stuff. So which one do you focus on? Which one do you care about the most, you know? Yeah. And so Michael Hastings, unfortunately, hasn't really gotten that much coverage. However, at some point, about 2 days after Michael Hastings' memorial service in Vermont, which Staff Sergeant Biggs was in attendance. I spoke with somebody else in attendance, and they did confirm he was there. So we know that that relationship is real because he was there. What we don't know is why that day from the memorial, Biggs is tweeting, talking about he doesn't want any conspiracy theories in this. He needs hard facts. Everything else is just crap, basically. And in my article, I have the exact quote and an embed of the tweet, so you can see it verbatim. But he also tweets a few minutes later that he now has a film director. 2 days after that, he makes his first appearance on Alex Jones' show. Now, most of us that are familiar with Alex Jones, whether you love him or hate him or are indifferent, we know that most often when he introduces himself as a film producer because of Endgame and his other documentaries. My hunch is the film producer that Biggs is discussing in his tweets is in fact Alex Jones, and that that's when they first made contact, which is the day of the Hastings Memorial. After that, a few days later after that, Joe Biggs was on Alex Jones' show again. 2 days after being on Alex Jones' show, Kimberly Dvorak, who is she's a reporter for The Examiner. The Examiner is pretty much a freelancer's newspaper more than anything. Her credentials are she's the National Homeland Security correspondent for The Examiner. I don't know what her ties or affiliations are with News Channel San Diego 6. However, they did bring her on, and they interviewed her twice, to my knowledge, about Michael Hastings. The first one, she talked about, you know, the possibility of remote control cars and the DARPA studies and just questions about Hastings' death. And I personally was like right on, you know, somebody in the mainstream's going to dig into this deeper. I got excited. I was happy. However, in the second a piece that she did on San Diego 6, she is basically, and she had a written piece that was an addendum to the video. And, you know, she's talking about Michael Hastings' body was missing and that the family did not authorize him to be cremated and so on and so forth. Well, that was the first time I'd actually heard that. So I did some searching and found that that actually had originated a couple days prior on InfoWars with Alex Jones when he had Biggs on for the second time. Now, if you watch that, if you watch the interview, which I'm not an Alex Jones fan for many reasons, but I watched hours and hours of this. Staff Sergeant Biggs never says that. He basically says he contacted the LAPD to find out about releasing the body, when it's going to be released, that sort of thing. And he says that the LAPD said that they already sent the body out. right then is when Alex Jones, he cuts in and interrupts, and you know, in full Jones, you know, style, his M.O., he starts ranting and raving, oh, the body's missing, the body's missing. And Staff Sergeant Biggs says, well, no, they sent it for cremation. Right then, Jones jumps in again without any further word from Biggs and says, they didn't have Elise Jordan or the family authorize the cremation, so now the body's missing, and then it's been burned without anybody saying it was okay. All right, so obviously what we have is a full-blown lie there, because Biggs didn't say that on the air. Now, whether he said that off the air with Alex, we don't know. What we do know is when Dvorak did her interview 2 days later, she was saying the exact same things. She had screaming Alex Jones-style headlines, the missing body and all of that, on the written piece, and she verbally discusses it in the video. 3 days after that, Cindy, she takes that down. Now, the video is still intact, or at least was still intact as of yesterday. But the written piece, you can see where she edited it with the timestamp, and she removed the headline, changed the headline to something more peaceful and somber. She took out the missing body stuff. She took out the non-consensual cremation stuff. She made no formal retraction, explanation, or correction whatsoever. Interestingly enough, Staff Sergeant Joe Biggs, somebody sends him the link to Kimberly Dvorak's story about missing bodies and questions Staff Sergeant Biggs on that. Staff Sergeant Biggs on his Twitter says he did not say that. He said, nope, did not say that. Okay, again, that's in my article with the embed in case any tweets get deleted or anything like that. So that sat me here thinking, and let me preface this with anybody else out there that says they're a writer or is a writer, if you want information, you need to call these people. And some of them will talk to you, some of them won't. But I picked up the phone, just like when I called Carol, when I talked to Carolyn Costello at KTLA. You know, I contacted Kimberly Dvorak, and it took a while, and she did not want to respond to me. She was very cagey. She has assured me she has Staff Sergeant Biggs on tape. Now, Cindy, I would like to know, if she has him on tape, why is she allowing him to slander her, basically call her a liar, and not do anything about it, not make a notation on her correction, on her edit, not acknowledge it in any way, shape, or form? And how can Staff Sergeant Biggs basically call her a liar for saying the exact same things that he is allowing in person with him present, Alex Jones, to say ad nauseum? So obviously somebody's lying here. So my theory is that Staff Sergeant Biggs genuinely wants some answers about Michael Hastings' death. I don't think they're as close as people have reported them to be. I think that's a lot of hype. I think that they were, you know, friends back in the day, and they touched base. I think Michael Hastings had an affinity with Biggs and was concerned for his welfare. I mean, Biggs has hinted that he has some issues like PTSD and whatnot. And I think what happened is Biggs was trying to get media attention, because one of the other things he did, Cindy, is he set up a whole bunch of social media accounts, Pinterest even, that he didn't use. The only one he's really used is Twitter. And, you know, he's contacting media. He's trying to, you know, do all this stuff. Every interview I've seen him in, regardless of whether it's on Alex Jones or with Dvorak or on KTLA or Fox News with Megyn Kelly, and even on RT with Abby breaking the set, he wants to keep Michael's name in the media. He wants people to keep asking questions. He's afraid that people are going to forget and nothing's going to happen. And I think, well, I won't say I think, I believe that. I believe that of him. I've watched hours and hours of footage of him. What I think happened, though, is I think Alex Jones is the only one who's giving him the time of day. You know, he's probably coming at him with the whole film producer thing, let's make a movie about this, and giving him all this airtime all the time. Alex Jones has bought him a plane ticket to go to L.A. So that he can go meet up with his reporters and do that sort of thing. So Alex Jones is very much wooing Staff Sergeant Biggs. And, you know, that's got to be a powerful thing when you want answers. Unfortunately, Staff Sergeant Biggs doesn't realize what bed he crawled into, because for somebody who quote-unquote said they don't want conspiracy theories, they want hard facts, they are certainly dealing with the wrong person.
Yes, exactly.
You know, I have a lot, since I've written this, I've been attacked by what I call the Jonesies, a lot of Alex Jones followers and friends. And the thing is, Cindy, is that Alex Jones could be a force to be reckoned with, because not all the time, but sometimes he's got some really excellent and legitimate information to share. The problem is that he doesn't know how to tell the truth, and he doesn't know how to deliver something. You know, when he had his opportunity on Piers Morgan on national news, he made every activist look like a raving loon.
Exactly, I agree.
You know, and if Alex Jones would you know, kind of step back and stop, you know, trying to be a persona and take a breath and let his guests actually talk and not, you know, embellish what they're saying, then, you know, there might be some credibility there. But unfortunately, as a journalist for me, I find no credibility in Alex Jones because his people are attacking me right now over this. And they, quote, unquote, this is what they tell me. They say, I don't care what you think. What Alex Jones says is the truth. Okay, well, as soon as somebody says, I don't care what you think, to me, okay, well, yeah, that's brainwashing. I believe Alex Jones is a modern-day cult leader, and the hardcore Alex Jones followers are cult followers.
Well, and the thing is, too, I saw, you know, my Facebook news feed, I saw that story about Michael Hastings was cremated without his family's permission. Then I saw it came from InfoWars, and I was just like, I'm not even going to give this story the time of day because I don't think it's from a credible source, which is sad because sometimes, you know, that like a, what do they say, like a broken clock, sometimes it can be right twice a day. But
right.
as soon as I saw the, you know, a source, I just didn't even read it. And then people, what's even sadder is people get all outraged about it and it keeps getting retweeted or shared or whatever you want to say, and then like you said, once that horse gets out of the barn, then we can't get it back in, and it just becomes accepted truth instead of wild speculation.
Exactly, and that goes right back to that confirmation bias. I mean, those of us that believe something nefarious happened with Michael Hastings, it's very easy to not necessarily think with full logic. It's very easy to fall into that confirmation bias, see something that substantiates a thought or a belief that we already have,
yeah.
And if we're time-strapped, we're like, oh, we'll read that later, but we'll share it now, you know, before we fact-check anything. And I'm a stickler about research and fact-checking, you know. I mean, I don't always get it right. And when I'm wrong, I will be the first person that I'll tell everybody, you know, I have a vast social media network like you do and stuff, and, you know, so we can get things out rapidly. And I have no problem saying, hey, you know what, I screwed up, I got it wrong, I misspoke, or whatever the case may be. But when people like Alex Jones don't do that, with Kimberly Dvorak, I don't know what the story is with her. I mean, I do have concerns of, you know, there's some people there, like, they're asking me, do you think Staff Sergeant Biggs is a plant? I don't. At this point, I don't. I mean, anything's possible, I suppose, but I think he's genuine. Now, Kimberly Dvorak, on the other hand, has somebody gotten to her? Has she been getting time on mainstream media on the San Diego 6 station to muddy the waters? I don't know, but she looks very suspicious to me at this point because she's either A, not telling the truth, or she's hiding something and not doing an acceptable correction and retraction, which, you know, everybody knows that. If you screw something up in print as a journalist, you need to make it good. And, you know, so as far as I'm concerned, her credibility is very sketchy, as much so as Alex Jones right now. She has made no statements whatsoever with regards to my article. I know other people who have questioned her that she has not responded to. Staff Sergeant Biggs has refused to talk to me before and after my article. You know, and Alex Jones, you know, he just really has nothing to say, you know, unless he's on the air. So you don't get his time otherwise. So, you know, the thing is the media screws up all the time. Cindy, you know this, I know this, you know, the people that we interact with all the time know this. And, you know, here's a really good for instance. When Staff Sergeant Biggs did his first news piece with Carolyn Costello on KTLA, and it was an exclusive for them, that's when they were breaking the story about this email, okay? And in this, and I wouldn't have caught this had I not watched this video so many times, she overlays a copy of this email, okay, as he's talking. And it just kind of correlated with me because I was paying attention to both. And that was, he says, quote, unquote, Monday morning, I woke up and I get an email, and it was very panicked. Okay, well, Michael Hastings did not send the email Monday morning. He sent the email Monday afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, okay, well, how can you see that? Well, he said that multiple times on other interviews, not just that one. He always says, Monday morning, I woke up and I get an email, okay, from Michael Hastings. Now, you know, I can't. One of the Jonesy conspiracy theorists, if they were looking at that, they'd say, oh, he's definitely a plant because Michael didn't send the email till the afternoon. But that doesn't make it so. The fact of the matter is Staff Sergeant Biggs is a full-time student, and he has a part-time job. And if you go by what's on his Twitter, it appears that he's a bouncer somewhere. And if you think about bars and bar time, well, yeah, he probably closed the bar, came home, slept, woke up in the afternoon, but that's morning to him. You know, so this is the problem that we have with media stuff and, you know, bits and pieces going out there and people just taking one fragment of something like the images with the sheet, you know, and these other things, and they run with it as if they've got a story to tell. And I do want to share another thing with you real quick. You know, there's another website, and I do not frequent this site, but in my research on Biggs and stuff, you know, I came across something in it that I think is relevant. You know, we've heard no statements whatsoever from Elise Jordan, Michael's wife, or really any of his friends and colleagues except for acknowledgement that they had received the email, you know, and that he had been, you know, paranoid prior to him dying. But there's, you know, there's another conspiracy site called Above Top Secret. And, you know, way back in the day, right after 9/11, it was one of the sites I had joined. And then I kind of caught on to, it was just very Alex Jones-ish and, you know, left. But in my searches, I found a thread that they had with regards to the reporting on this missing body and non-consensual cremation of Michael Hastings. And I will say that this particular thread, the people that were participating in it, they were being very respectful. They were having a genuine conversation. They were basically dissecting that news story. They weren't, like, saying a bunch of wild things about it. And that was refreshing. So I kept reading to see. I was looking, is there anything in here? And there was a post. Now, I don't know that this person is legitimately of the Hastings family, okay? But I would like to read you what this post says, because there's nothing in it that's adversarial. They're not putting anyone down. They're not trying to say, look at me, like an average disinfo person would, you know, online. It just says, and this, and by the way, this was posted the day after Biggs was on Alex Jones the second time when Alex Jones was talking about the missing body and so on. So this right. person says, I'm a member of Mike Hastings' family and have yet to comment on any of this, but as you seem like a respectful and intelligent group, I've decided to. I don't want to put our private details out there, but it was definitely, without a doubt, Mike in the car that night. Mike was not cremated against family wishes or without consent. From what I recall, they say Sergeant Biggs, but it's Staff Sergeant Biggs, was not a particularly close friend nor confidant of Mike's. He was a friend and a supportive one, which of course is appreciated, but no one that anyone in the family would tell or has told anything to. It's been bothersome to see all of this, but we've all somewhat accepted the quote, whatever, let people say what they want mentality. I just wanted to tell people the truth about someone I loved from my perspective. Now, I would be of more of the mind that this is potentially a legitimate response that somebody did, because it's not adversarial. Most often when people want to say something, you know, against what's going on, you know how they get, Cindy. They get the same way with you when they disagree with something you're saying. You know, they will throw all kinds of stuff out there to muddy the waters. This is a very intelligently written, you know, post. So whether it was a family member or not, it should make people stop a minute and pause and question, who is Staff Sergeant Biggs? Who has authorized this man to make all of these statements, the ones that are mild and the ones that are wild? You know, why has Elise Jordan not made any statement with regards to this? I understand she's grieving, but she is a stand-up journalist herself. Michael was one of the best journalists that we had in our country, and she has the power to squelch or squash some of this stuff, you know, this outlandish stuff with the missing bodies and stuff like that. And in a simple statement, is it going to change anybody's mind that already wants to believe it? No, but at least the truth is there for the record, right?
Right. Well, Sherry Roberts, thanks so much for coming on and talking about this with us. And and trying to unmuddy the waters a little bit. And I will definitely post your blog and the articles, links to the articles you sent me on the newsletter that goes out about the, you know, about this podcast. But can you tell my listeners where they can access this information also?
Yeah, my personal blog is sherryspeak.com, and the only hard thing about it is the spelling of my name. It's C-H-E-R-I, and then the word speak, like spoken, .com. So sherryspeak.com, there's a few articles on there about Hastings. There's also a piece on there with all of the background on the remote-controlled vehicles if people want to peruse those. And just lots of stuff. There's even some stuff about you, Cindy.
When I, like, I don't own a car, and if I owned a car, I'm pretty sure it wouldn't have the capacity to be remotely, controlled, because I think those have to be newer cars. But every time I rent a car, I'm like, oh shit.
Yeah. Well, you know, let's take a play out of the Alex Jones playbook real quick. You know, with his guests, the real controversial ones, before they go off the air, he says, okay, you know, we're talking about this stuff, and so, you know, I'm going to say right now for the record, I don't have a car, so nobody's going to blow up my car. I have no intention of killing myself. So if something happens to me and they say that's what happened, it's not. Investigate.
Exactly. That's what I always say.
You know, whether you're a truth teller, Cindy, and, you know, we all have to be careful, because there are people that don't want truth to be told, and we know this.
I'm certainly not paranoid, though. And so anyway, Sherry, thank you so much for being on Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox, and it was great to talk about you, I almost said. It was great to talk with you.
Well, thanks, Cindy. I appreciate it. It was really great to talk to you again.
Okay, have a great day, and talk to you soon, I hope.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
Our next guest on the Soapbox is Chris Phillips. Chris became active in 2000 with the Ralph Nader campaign for president, and even more active after Bush stole the election and allowed 9/11 to happen. With the onset of the Iraq and Afghanistan wars, Chris took to the streets time and time again to demand accountability for what he sees as countless war crimes. He continued his activism when Occupy Wall Street began, traveling around the country, helping different occupations. He now devotes his time entirely to educating people about drones and environmentally conscious living.
Chris Phillips, welcome to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox.
Hey, Cindy, thank you so much. I really, really appreciate the opportunity to be here.
Oh, no problem. So what I brought you on was so you can promo an action that you're organizing for September 11th in what I like to call washed up deceit. But can you tell us a little bit about this? This is being recorded on July 31st, and yesterday on July 30th, as of this recording, we found out that PFC, Bradley Manning, was convicted on most of the charges that were brought against him, and he could be, of course, sentenced to over 130 years in prison. So you participated in an action last night in front of the White House that sounded very energetic. So can you tell my listeners about it?
Sure. Different groups here have been coming together around this Bradley Manning issue, because it's just so completely important to all of our freedoms and liberties, everyone in this country. We had already staged the action because we pretty much knew that the system was going to screw Bradley, and we just expected that he would not get off. Just follow suit with everything else they've done. So we had already planned on doing this regardless of whatever had come down. And unfortunately, it was what we didn't want. And we don't consider it a victory that he got off to the aiding the enemy.
Exactly.
We just feel like, no, we feel like that was them just satiating the people and not enraging them to the point of full revolution, which was really on the table had he gotten, you know, either death or life on this one. So,
and he is going to get life in prison. So yesterday I said it was between getting life in prison or dying in prison. And so he, even if they give him, you know, half that time, that's life in prison.
Yeah, yeah, we all, the consensus seems to be somewhere between 20 and 40 years, and that they will consider that, like, merciful. They'll consider that clemency, so that they look good, and that, I mean, it's just absurd. It's so completely absurd, and it looks like we're going to be rallying around this guy for a while, and it's upsetting.
You know,
it's very upsetting.
What else I think is absurd? What else I think is absurd is all these pleas to tell Obama to pardon him. Obama's the one that persecuted him.
He is. He is. So we went to the Blight House. I like to call it the Blight House, not the White House.
In washed-up D.C., as I like to call it.
Washed-up D.C. at the Blight House.
D.C.
For sure.
Washed-up D.C. So you guys took noisemakers and... What I love to do when I'm there in washed-up D.C. is take my bullhorn around 11 o'clock at night, so it's pretty quiet, and I can tell who's ever residing in the Blight House exactly what they should be doing and what I think of them, and that's also, I think, very effective.
Do you get away with that? Do you get away? They don't arrest you when you do that?
Nope. I stay in the park and, you know, I stay in public, you know, on the public property, and they can't really do anything, so...
Wake up, Obama. Wake up, Obama. Wake up, buddy.
That's what I say. And so anyway, you have noisemakers and...
Yeah, we were blowing whistles. I had a whistle in my mouth.
Yeah.
And I did not stop blowing that whistle for about an hour right outside his house, just
right.
Blowing it loud and hard because, you know, the whistle started to take on, I realized it last night, the whistle started to take on a whole new meaning. I mean, the whistle's, like, got this thing, you know, whistle blowing is, you know, important. And, you know, it's just like the tent was to Occupy as the whistle is now to the movement. I mean,
okay.
We all need to be blowing whistles.
Also, Obama's administration has leading the pack of all the previous administrations of persecuting whistleblowers, not just Bradley Manning.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that it follows suit that nothing has changed. It follows suit that he gave us no hope. You know, one of the points that somebody has made to me in the, you know, since the NSA leaks came out, was that, you know, Nixon bugged an office and had to resign, and Obama bugged a nation, and he's still in power. Now, if that is an imperial authority, I don't know what is. I mean, it's really gone way too far, way too far.
So, Chris, tell my listeners and me about the action that you're planning on September 11th.
Well, you know, in May, there was the March Against Monsanto on May 25th, and we were really happy. A lot of us that support, you know, the movement were really happy to see that because it was a viral critical mass moment on the GMO issue, and, you know, obviously we want to clean up the food. We feel like it's affected everyone's brains and hearts and everything.
Yeah.
And the next day, we were just shooting the proverbial poo, and someone said, when do we get mad and march against the drones? And I was like, oh, God, here we go. So, ever since then, it's just been a snowball down a hill into an avalanche, and it's just been going crazier and crazier ever since then. So essentially our goal is to bring all the peace-focused, peace-conscious organizations and individuals together, and it not just works as March Against Drones, but it also works as Millions Against Destruction. So we've been reaching out and trying to get solidarity actions popping up in different areas. So we have, you know, a substantial action in, say, Melbourne, Australia, another one in New York City and Chicago and a few other places that have taken it really seriously. And, you know, and when we look globally, we're trying to, if the drone issue isn't, you know, popular, say, in France or something, we've been saying, you know, well, millions against destruction. I know there's peace-loving people there, so let's stand together for peace. Going forth with that. And so, you know, on 9/11, you know, trying to bring the truthers together with the, you know, anti-domestic drone people, with the anti-foreign drone people. And it's all different groups and different focuses, but we have to stand together. That's number one. We just have to stand together. So I'm really trying to create a unifying theme that can bring everyone together. And then on that day, on 9/11, we're going to rally on the mall starting at 12 noon. And then that's in solidarity, by the way. I just need to let everybody know. We are aware of the fact that Muslims are afraid to protest on 9/11. So there's a group that is protesting. It was doing it autonomously of their own accord before we even met them, called the American Muslim Political Action Committee, and they're staging their own march against fear. So the rally is actually their rally, and we'll be there supporting them. They'll have a stage and microphones and speakers and all this, which, by the way, they're actually looking for some more speakers, so I don't know if you're interested, Cindy. But,
I'm going to be in solidarity with you, but I'll be in Havana, Cuba that day. And I also want to go on the record saying that I am against drones, but I'm also against manned aerial bombing and all the other destruction that Empire brings. So, Chris, do you have a website or something that people can get more information about this?
Yeah, we've got three main links we've been giving out. The one is the first one is the community page. That's facebook.com/marchagainstdrones. Mm-hmm. And then the event is tinyurl.com/themarchagainstdrones. Add the in there. And then we have solidarity actions popping up all over, and that link is tinyurl.com/mad-event-list. And you can see every city that's coming up and what they're doing. And I wanted to second what you said. I just want to say, yeah, against manned aerial bombing as well. A lot of people like to think that, you know, that valor comes from actually being in battle. I think that's BS. And I totally agree with you. All war is wrong.
Not only that, but these days of manned aerial bombing, by the time the bomb hits, the pilot is miles away. So it's not like they're, and I'm not even for hand-to-hand combat, but, you know, it's not like they're there on the ground taking any kind of risk. They're indiscriminately murdering innocent people from, instead of, you know, tens of thousands of miles away, you know, thousands of miles away, vertically and horizontally. So anyway, I will, if you send me those links, I'll make sure to post them on the newsletter when I send this out. And I want to thank you for doing this, and I want to wish you the best of luck in these actions on September 11th that I think are so important. And I will be speaking about it in Cuba on September 11th. And this is another thing, I just like a side issue about drones and about Obama murdering or assassinating, executing Americans overseas with the use of drones, is that the FBI has said that Assata Shakur is on the top terrorist list in the world, and she has been gotten asylum in Cuba since the late 70s or something like that. So Cuba is under the threat right now of Obama, droning Assata Shakur over there, because she's on that top terrorist list. So definitely you can bet your life I will be speaking about that in Havana, Cuba, and I will also give you all a shout out for what you're doing. But our comrades in Cuba really appreciate the work that we do here to struggle against the empire.
Yeah, thank you, Cindy. I really appreciate everything you do. I've always been very grateful for your level of bravery and in the face of this corruption. It's been a hard road, and I don't imagine it's going to get too much easier. You know, we really have to stick together, and we really got to protect each other. And so I'm really grateful for the opportunity to get this message out. So if anybody that's listening, if 9/11 makes you mad, stand with us, because we have to reclaim that day from the New World Order. We have to reclaim it from the corrupt. And I've had enough pseudo-patriotic BS for a lifetime since 2001, and I'm ready for the real people of the world to reclaim this day for the future and for peace. So thank you so, so much.
Well, thank you, Chris. And like you said, solidarity makes it easier. So, Chris Phillips, thank you so much for being on Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox.
God bless, Cindy. You have a great one.
Okay, talk to you soon.
Well, that's our Soapbox for this week. I hope you learned something as always, and I hope you were inspired to take further action as always. And also, as always, I'd like to thank my engineer, Don DeBar. I'd like to thank my guests, Sherry Roberts and Chris Phillips. And also, as always, I would like to thank you and tell you how much I appreciate you for listening to the show and for supporting Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. I'm Cindy Sheehan. You've been listening to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. Peace out for now.